Hey girl, welcome to the Empower Her podcast, where we are all about taking purpose-driven action toward building lives we really freaking love. My name's Keisha, and I'm an entrepreneur obsessed with giving you actual tools to help take you from where you are now to where you want to go in your life, career, and relationships. And this podcast, it's all about real talk and having some fun as we share incredible stories, tips, and tricks to help us get out of our own way and unapologetically make some moves. So girlfriend, let's do the damn thing. Hey girl, I am so excited that you're here for today's episode because we have on the show one of my favorite authors of all time. His name is John Acuff. And if you're not familiar with him, he is a quirky guy. He's such a fun guy to listen to. He is a New York Times bestselling author of 7 books. One of my favorite books that I've ever read is called Finish, which is written by John, one of his number one bestsellers. He's also an Inc. magazine top 100 leadership speaker. So he's spoken to hundreds of thousands of people at conferences all around the world and companies, and you're just going to love his dynamic personality. And the way that he writes is so powerful because he combines science and research with just joy and humor and storytelling. So it just really hits home. And we talk about his brand new book that I read and love, and I think you're really going to vibe with too. It's called Soundtracks, and it's all about overthinking. So if you struggle with overthinking or just getting in your own way from taking action towards the goals that you want or the life that you want to create, this episode is super tactical and it's a lot of fun. So I cannot wait to hear what you think of today's show. And without further ado, let's dive right in. John, I am so excited. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think today's going to be a blast.
It is. And I will tell you, obviously, I'm a big fan of your work. Otherwise, I wouldn't have you on the podcast.
It'd be awkward otherwise. If you thought I sucked, this would be a long interview for both of us.
Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, who's this guy? Get him out of here. I love your humor. And I love like your dad jokes. And then I love your books. I just think you're a pretty cool person.
That's so funny.
Before we dive into the concept of everything that Soundtracks is all about and overthinking and all of this jazz, can you tell us like why is humor so important to you? Because everything that you do, it just seems like you're having a good time doing it. And I think that's what really attracts me to the content that you put out there is like you just seem like you're having fun with life. Like tell us why that's so important to you.
Well, I definitely grew up around it. My dad, as soon as I was 18, would take me to comedy clubs in Boston. So I kind of say that humor is a currency in our family growing up. My brother Bennett, who lives in Tampa, is the funniest in the family by far. Like he's hilarious. So I grew up around it. And then I like to use humor because like I believe what Chris Rock said, which is that there's some subjects people won't listen to unless they're laughing at the same time. So I also see the value of like, it makes an idea sticky. It's really fun. I watch probably 100 comedians for every one business speaker I watch. And because that's technically my category of what I do. But like, I enjoy doing it in real life. And so like whenever somebody goes, okay, I want to be a speaker. I want to be an author. Do I have to be funny? I always say, be your version of funny. Like sometimes they'll read a book that's like, you should open with a joke and they'll tell a terrible joke. That's not, it's like wearing your dad's coat to the 8th grade dance. Like it doesn't fit you. So I say like, if you're slapstick at a dinner party, be slapstick online. If you're dry at dinner party, like, so I wrote down, I just read it in my notebook the other day. I'm a big idea collector. I had written, I don't forget when I thought this, I was like, jacuzzis are weird. Like they're a weird thing to do with another couple. Cause like if somebody came over for dinner, you'd never be like, do you want to take a bath after dinner? You guys want to hop in the bath? Like that's what a jacuzzi is. And like, that's a weird thing. Like, but we do that with couples. And I was like that I'd never connected bath to jacuzzi. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll use that someday as a throwaway joke. So I just kind of think that way. And I think it's fun.
But you just used it now and it hit. I was like, I'm here for this. So there you go.
Yeah. So it's stuff like I don't know. For me, it releases tension and challenging topics too. It's how we communicate when we're with our friends. Like your best friends are often people you're laughing the most with. And so I try to put it into my books. And the other thing is from a business perspective, I just realized that a lot of the people in my category, they don't use humor. And so it gives me a chance to go like, hey, I'll never out research some people. Like I'll never like, because that's their gift and mine is different. And so if anything, I think that the challenge is to value the gifts you have, because sometimes like I always tell people we have the easiest time recognizing someone else's gift and devaluing our own. And so for me, I have to, my wife will go, "Oh, that draft had no humor. Like, where are you in that?" And it means I've become serious author for a minute. I need to go back and go, "Oh, that's right. Like, where would I put personality? Where would I say something that's funny to me, that's relatable?"
I love that. And so important. I think sometimes people write it off as trivial, but it's like, if you're not having fun, to me, the ultimate like fail would be you've accomplished all these things, but you didn't actually enjoy the process of it anyway.
Yeah.
It's like,
you're miserable. You end up not. Yeah. So, and high performing people tend to do a bad job at celebrating anyway. Like, they run right past the fun because they go, fun doesn't have an ROI. Like, I know I'm in a stressful spot if I'm like not making time for joyful things that might not look on the surface like they're super productive, but are actually kind of soul giving. I asked this other author, because we were talking about like, why do influencers fall apart? Why do leaders fall apart? Why do people who have built something kind of tend to, you know, lose it all? And he said, there's two things. Yeah. One, they're isolated. And he said, the second thing is they don't have a life-giving hobby. And I thought that was really fascinating. And he said, like, their whole identity becomes wrapped up in this thing they're creating, and they lose a life-giving hobby where they're being silly, or they're gardening, or they're doing something that they're not going to turn into a course. It's just, I like to hang glide, and I'm never going to sell a course on hang gliding. Like, I just like it because it, you know, it gives me energy. So I think there's huge value in maintaining that joyful spirit that feeds your work ultimately.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I just want to preach that to everybody, because I really think that's such a solution that people often skim over because of your point of like, what's the ROI on it? It's like, the ROI is that you're happy and then you're excited, and then enthusiasm is contagious, which brings more people into your work. So love that. Okay. One thing I want to start with is kind of how you basically made a decision. There's a lot of women that are going to listen to this episode that have this thing on their heart that they want to do, but they're telling themselves a story of why they can't do it. I want to talk about your decision of becoming a public speaker.
Yeah.
And in particular, so I want to know all about that, but also I would love if you could share kind of the soundtrack that you were playing, to use your example, of the effect on your kids when you were leaving home to go speak, because I think that's really interesting. And I really resonated with that part of the book. So give us the whole.
Yeah. So, rundown. I mean, the background in 2008, I'd hit a career ceiling. Like, some, there's a lot of people listening to this that feel stuck. That's like, I'll remember, like, speaking of humor, I was like early 30s and I would sit in the car in my parking lot in Dudwoody, Georgia, outside of Atlanta. And I would listen to Jimmy Eat World song, The Middle, like, to get fired up to go in. And that song is 1,000,000,000% about a high school sophomore girl. And I was like, I don't even care. Like, and it'd be like, "You're okay, little girl." I'm like, he's talking to me. This is about me. Like, I'm not. And so, like, I was just stuck. And so at the time, I started to write on the side without a plan, without a, like, here's where it goes. I think sometimes when people finish stuff, they go back and act like they followed 17 really clear steps. And I think that's so unfair to people who are in the middle. And so I didn't have this perfect plan, just started to write. And then an event planner reached out of the blue from Oklahoma and was like, "Hey, will you come speak at this event?" I'd never done that. I didn't know you did that. I didn't know people got paid at that. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to structure a speech. All I had was this tiny thought that was like, I think I can do that. I think I could become a public speaker. I think I can write a book. And I had that thought, and I put a ton of action against that thought, and that turned into results. And so my big belief is that you can turn new thoughts into new actions and new results. But most people don't understand that they get to control their thoughts. You get to choose your thoughts. Even my most type A friends who put their clothes out the night before they go to the gym because they know it'll ensure they go, they don't bring their thoughts with them. They don't plan thoughts ahead of time. They don't go, "I have a big meeting on Thursday and I know I'm going to be tempted to think the wrong thing, so I'm going to bring three thoughts with me," or three soundtracks, I'd say. So it really, like, 2008 really showed me, like, wait a second, if you change your thinking, it can change your life. You know, that path launched me to moving to Nashville, launched me to writing books, it launched me to becoming a full-time speaker. And then with that came a lot more travel. So that's the second thing you asked about.
Yeah.
So my travel days went from like 80 or zero a year to like 60 to 80, which is a lot of travel. I've got two young kids. And at the time, I would really make a big deal about me leaving. Like, I'd be like, "I'm so sorry. I'll be home in four sleeps. This is terrible. Oh my gosh." And finally, my wife pulled me aside and was like, "Hey, they don't even know to be sad. You're teaching them sadness. And what's interesting is physically, it's the part of your brain called mirror neurons, where kids will mirror the emotions you put out. And she said, you feel guilty and you're asking them to hold the guilt. She said, we're not saying that to you. We're not putting that on you. We want you to go crush your job, do your job. We love that you love your job. And one of the negative parts of the way I was acting was I was teaching my kids that work was bad, that work was this terrible thing that takes you away from home, that work was evil. And I think there's a lot of parents right now that spend 18 years teaching their kids that work sucks, and then they're surprised they graduate college and don't want to get a job. Well, of course they don't. They watched you for 18 years go, oh, I got it, finally the weekend. Oh, and they're like, they're watching that. And so that really shifted the way I think about business travel. And I saw, okay, it's not kind to me to do that. It's not kind to my kids. Like, I was acting like I was going to the moon or like Mars, like versus the DFW, Marriott for 2 days. And it ruined this really beautiful job. I love my job. I miss the travel part of my job this season. Like, I miss being with people in live event spaces. And so I think that anyone who has to do business travel, any mom that goes, you know what, I have a thing that I feel called to build, and I feel like I was taught that moms don't get to build things or whatever. Like, you can stop that and go, wait a second, who's putting that on me? Like, is my spouse putting that on me, or am I putting that on me? And 99 times out of 100, unless your husband sucks, it's you putting it on you. And that's where you go, well, if I'm putting it on me, I have the power to not put that on me. And then it's like, watch out.
Yeah. And I love that, because I think it's almost like you're catching yourself saying, wait a second, obviously Jenny, your wife, is pulling you aside and saying, like, you're projecting this onto our kids and they're mirroring your emotions about this. But on top of that, then you're able to then dig into the root of, like, where does this soundtrack
I pulled the thread come from? That one I pulled the thread on that. So let's say an example of that would be, maybe there's somebody you work with and you're always like, oh, like, she is the worst. Mary is the worst. I would go, well, let's explore that. Let's pull the thread. What makes her the worst? And you might go, well, she got a promotion that I wanted. And you go, well, what does that mean? And you might say, well, she got it even though she's not qualified. And we might pull the thread until we realize she's doing more with her qualifications than you are. And secretly, what's really upsetting you is you don't feel brave. Well, then we can work on that. Like, let's go do brave stuff. Like, let's figure that out. So I pulled the thread on that one was, my family growing up, my dad's a pastor, my mom's a dental hygienist. They never traveled for work. So because I had good parents, I interpreted that good parents never travel. So therefore, if I travel, I'm a bad parent. And you're constantly like building these soundtracks. And most of us are so busy, we never take time to pause and go, wait a second, is that something I want to believe? And like, here's what I'd say. If anyone wants to understand how to identify a broken soundtrack, and a soundtrack is just my phrase for a repetitive thought, all you have to do is write down something you want to do. I want to start a podcast. I want to be more vocal on Instagram. I want to ask somebody out. I just got divorced and there's somebody I want to ask out. Whatever, I want to write a book. Write down a desire you have and then listen to your reaction. Listen to the first thing you think, because every reaction is an education. Every reaction is an education. And if it feels like too much pressure, because sometimes the scariest question for people is, what do you desire? Because they feel like they don't even have permission to think through that question. Just say, what do I desire today? Like, what would a good week look like this week? And then write it down. And if you hear yourself go, you don't get to do that, like, you're not qualified to do that, like, you've just stumbled upon a broken soundtrack, and we can work with that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Let me dig into that permission piece there too. When you're talking with people that are like, John, I'm really struggling with just feeling like I'm like worthy of this life that I want, like, they know what that dream is, or they have that goal on their heart. And then when they say it out loud right afterwards, that soundtrack is broken. How do you help them even like process through like believing that they're worthy of this dream?
Well, it takes time. That's the thing. Like, so, I'll meet people that'll say, John, I'm trying to lose weight and this exercise isn't working. I'll say, well, how long have you done it? And they'll say 10 days. And I'll say, how long did it take you to gain the weight? And they'll say 10 years. You gave the problem 10 years, you gave the solution 10 days. So a soundtrack that I'd say to write down is, don't give the problem a year and the solution a week. Like, be more generous to yourself in the solution part. So there's going to be situations where you have a new soundtrack that changes how you think. Like, there's like, I 100% believe that. In the same way that, like, if you have a neighbor that you have a bad relationship with and they're always grumpy and you're like, I can't stand that neighbor. And you find out her mom has cancer and you go, I had no idea that, like, she's projecting her, like, that thought, that idea changes your understanding. So there's times in life where a simple realization can change your life. Like I'm just going to read one I got the other day, because I keep seeing like online, I've seen so many people share their new soundtracks. And this one, I think will really encourage your audience. I got a post from a woman, I won't say her name so she can remain anonymous. And she said, John, I look at my son's football helmet when he played at Texas A&M. So she has a son who played at Texas A&M. And I talk about symbols a lot in the book. Like, how do you tie a soundtrack to a symbol? And she said, I see it as a symbol of a new soundtrack. My broken soundtrack tells me being 5'11 and strong means I'm too big. So she's been telling herself, I'm 5'11, I'm too strong, I'm too big. And she said, and now a new soundtrack tells me, if you were not the size you are, your son would not have been able to go to college on a football scholarship as a left tackle. So that thought, shit, like, can you imagine she's been beating herself up for her height? Like, she didn't do something that caused longer legs. Like, she didn't do that. And so now she goes, wait a second, I see generational gifts that are because I'm part of this. That changes. And so I'd say there are times where you get a thought, you get a soundtrack, and it changes your whole perspective. But more than likely, what happens is you get this new baby tiny soundtrack, and you've got to protect it, and you've got to strengthen it. You've got to be patient with it. You've got to grow it. You've got to find 10 ways to make sure it's all around you so that you're reminded of it, because your broken one has had a 10-year head start. Your broken one is doing steroids and is massive and is like ready to rumble. And then you have this new one and you go, I hope it goes well. And then the big broken one, which is so well-trained, just completely attacks it. So in moments like that, I say, like, that's the third R. The three R's in the book are retire broken soundtracks, replace them with new ones, and repeat the new ones so often they become as automatic as the old ones. So the repeat process really matters.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay. I want to dig into some of these frameworks, because you've got like these three R's, you've got these questions asked. There's so many good, like, tangible things. So let's start with the three R's. I know you just mentioned that, but can you dig into that a little bit more, like how we catch on to that?
Yeah. So, my job as an author is I try to take complex subjects and put handles on them, because we have enough ideas. We just don't have handles to carry them into the world with us. We don't have handles to bring them into a Thursday or a conversation with a spouse. And so I took overthinking, this big, really kind of potentially fuzzy thing, and said, okay, if I wanted to turn my overthinking from a super problem into a superpower, what would that take? Because a lot of people will say, stop overthinking. And my opinion is, why would I ever turn off this amazing machine? I'm really good at thinking. What if I just fed it with the right thoughts? Mm-hmm. Like, if you can worry, you can wonder, if you can spin, you can soar, if you can doubt, you can dominate. What if we figured out how to feed your overthinking with thoughts that push you forward and hold you back? And the way you do that is you say, okay, I'm going to retire these broken ones that are in the way. They're stealing time, creativity, productivity. I'm going to replace them, because I need, like, the machine is running. I need to replace it with good ones. And then I'm going to repeat them so often they become automatic. And so that's the three R's. And there's steps you can do with each one. But it becomes really fun. And some people listening will go, you know what? I'm ready to just jump in. I've got a new one I want to write. Awesome. Some people go, I got like 10 that are just gnarly in the way that I gotta retire before I can even dare to dream. And some will go, okay, I've been trying to make this new idea stick. How do I repeat it? So they definitely are linear, but you can go individually and go, this is the one that I need the most right now.
Yeah. Okay. Let's start, let's use an example of one. So someone is struggling with their health, right? Maybe they have always kind of been at this certain weight, and they're not super, super overweight. They're kind of just good, but they want to escalate to a greater version of themselves. What soundtrack, because I feel like a lot of women run into that area of maybe things are good. I think health is an easy example, but things are good and they want something more. And they kind of tell themselves everything's fine. I should be grateful for what I have. It's not too bad, but they want more. So what type of soundtrack, in your head, are you ooh, that might be a soundtrack they're playing, or that might be something that's coming up for them?
So, I mean, I think one of the soundtracks I see a lot is imposter syndrome. And that can be, so let's apply that to health. They'll say, I'm not a real runner, or I'm not in shape. Like, I'm in okay shape, but I'm not in shape. And because I feel like an imposter if I say I'm a runner or, a cyclist or whatever. Somebody asked me that the other day. They said, how do I get over imposter syndrome? And the broken soundtrack there, in my opinion, is the word over, because over is a word of perfectionism. That means you climbed over a wall and you're done with it. I like to trade that word out and say through. How do I go through imposter syndrome? Because I'm going to go through it. And so for me, I've written 7 books, some are New York Times bestsellers. I still feel like an imposter some days. I still feel like not a real writer. So I go through it. So a woman that said to me, hey, I'm trying to figure out my health, I would say, okay, well, tell me about what you enjoy doing when it comes to health. Like, tell me who you are. And maybe she would say, well, I'm not, you know, I run, but I'm not a runner. And I might pause on that and go, wait a second. What do you mean you're not a runner? Describe to me what a real runner is. And chances are they'll go, well, I've done like five Ks. And I'll go, you know who runs 5Ks? Like runners. Like you're a runner. Like you're right now, you're a runner. And then the other thing I would say is, what's the destination you're trying to get to? So, you know, when you kind of get into that middle spot, and you know, we've talked about the book Finish a little bit, like, what are you trying to get to? Like, is it, okay, there's a, you know, certain amount of time a week I want to work out. Is there a certain size you're trying to be? Like, what's the destination you're trying to aim toward, so we can figure out a path to that versus just having, you know, a soundtrack. And maybe, you know, maybe for you, it's I'll never be in shape. Like I always tell people, like soundtracks travel in absolutes, never, always, forever. Everyone else has a better time with their weight. One that I see a lot is people go, they'll compare themselves to who they used to be. We always talk about comparison from like, don't compare yourself online to somebody else. I think a toxic thing you do is compare yourself to somebody you used to be, and you weren't even that person.
Yes.
That go, I used to be in amazing shape when I was 22. And if they were honest, they go, you might've been in better shape, totally. But you might be misremembering something that's not kind to you. And you also don't take into effect, I was also 22. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a mortgage. I didn't have kids. Like, that's so unfair. Yeah. So a new soundtrack for you might be, new seasons need new scoreboards. New seasons need new scoreboards. Like, you're in the middle of a pandemic. You need a new scoreboard. It's not fair for you as a woman to say, oh, this is exactly how things have always been. I can't believe I'm having a hard time. No, you should be having a hard time. Like, another new soundtrack is, this is my first global pandemic. Every person listening to this should write that down on a piece of paper, put it by their laptop. This is my first global pandemic. Because I keep meeting people that are going, I'm just not doing well with virtual school. Like, I'm terrible at virtual school. And I go, yeah, you should be. You should suck at virtual school. You've never done it. And also, the worst time to learn something new is during a global pandemic. Like, stop being so mean to yourself. Like, you're probably terrible at hang gliding. You've never done that. So that's what I mean. Like, I would give somebody those kind of soundtracks and spend time going, okay, well, what's really going on? And how can we replace those broken ones with something that's actually helpful?
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's so, this book is so important because it's a simple concept, but the way that you explain it with all of these like examples and storytelling, it just like, it makes it stick, and those tangible little things like make it so applicable. Because I think sometimes books about like overthinking, or if it's something like around topics that can be very sciencey, it's just like, it just kind of like glazes over. You're like, oh, I don't even know what I read. But because of your storytelling ability, it just hits home so well. So thank you for writing this book first and foremost.
Oh, thanks. That's super encouraging to hear. Cause I didn't want to, you're right. Like, a mindset book can either be really holistic and you go, well, but what do I do with that? Or it can be really scientific and you go, I don't know what most of those words mean. And I don't know what to do next, but I try to make everything I do super actionable, super practical, super from the trenches. And so there's, you know, there's 35 stories from other people. So it's not like it's just from my view. We did a ton of research to say, okay, if you're an executive, if you're a stay-at-home mom, if you're, you know, a college student, here's how overthinking looks, and here's how you can apply these lessons to your life.
Yeah. Ooh, it's just so good. So, okay, let's talk about the whole concept of fear in this book, right? You talked about like fear comes free and faith takes work. Yep. Like, give us kind of your take on that as a whole.
Yeah. So what's interesting is you've never had to plan a negative thought. Like, those just show up. No one listening to this has ever had to say, you know, on Thursday at 3 p.m., I'm going to think about that stupid thing I said 4 years ago and just wince. That's what I'm going to do. Like, those show up. Fear comes free. Like, it's going to find you. It was really interesting. Yeah. There's a study by Roy Baumeister that in the English language, we don't even have a word that's the opposite of trauma, where it's a word that says you have an overwhelming sense of joy in life that catches you off guard in the middle of the grocery store, because like negativity shows up on its own. And then the brain is really fascinating because the brain confuses fake trauma with real trauma. So even if the trauma is fake, your brain releases real opioids and like freaks out. Your brain has cognitive bias. So it likes to believe what it always believes. So there's all these things. And the good news of that is, even though your brain's a jerk, you can change it. And there's been so many smart people writing about that. I think the most fascinating study about the impact of fear or the impact of your words for me in the book was from Daniel Kahneman. And this one is just like, in every book, there's some idea that somebody else's idea that just blows my mind. And I'm like, I gotta tell people. I kind of call it the foyer idea. There's ideas that I bump into that, like, if you came to my house for dinner, my wife would be like, let her in. And I'd be in the foyer like, and then like, it's a foyer idea. So this study is crazy. They take two groups of college students at NYU, and they say, hey, we want you to take these words. Here's a bunch of words, it's a word bank, make some sentences. They say it to the second group. Second group has words that are hidden in there about being old. So words like Florida, retired, bald. So the two groups write up sentences. And then they say the second part of the study is down the hall. Please walk down there. And then they secretly time the people. The whole point of the study was to secretly time them. The people who had read the words being related to old physically walked slower. Just reading words like retired, Florida, bald made them physically change how they behave. So that's what I mean when, like, the words you are exposed to, the words you prime yourself with, like, all these things matter. And that's where fear gets really, really loud. And if you ignore that, if you let fear kind of rule the day, then you never really get to change. And so you've got to have this moment where you go, it's almost like you invite fear in for a cup of coffee and you go, wait a second, but what's really going on? Like, wait a second. What's really happening right here? Like, where is this coming from? And again, you kind of pull the thread. And that's why I think community is important too. Like, I think community is really important. And when I say community, I don't mean you need to have 100 heart friends. I don't have 100 heart friends. I mean, you need a handful of people that you would go, I trust this person. I love this person. I respect this person. And they love me enough to ask me questions. Like, that's what I mean.
So true. I hope that you are loving this conversation with John as much as I am. I wanted to pop in here real quick and just thank our sponsor of the show, Organifi. I love this company. I love their products. And if you haven't heard of them or tried them out yet, I want to keep you in the loop. So Organifi is a company that has an entire line of supplements, organic superfood blends, and plant-based nutrition. And why I'm obsessed with them is because every single one of their products is made with really high-quality ingredients. They taste phenomenal, and they're at a really affordable price to get a lot of bang for your buck. And honestly, every product that I've tried of theirs, I've loved. From their superfood teas, to their immunity, their supplements, their protein, I'm obsessed with their green juice. And honestly, what's really interesting, while we're on the protein thing, is the protein tastes really freaking good because nothing in their entire product line has more than 3 grams of sugar. The protein itself has only 2 grams, and it also has 20 grams of protein, but it doesn't taste chalky. You know how some proteins just taste like, ugh. It's such a great protein, so I highly recommend it if you're looking for a new protein. And then if you toss in their green juice, like, welcome to the best morning of your life. It's so great. So I highly recommend checking out their products. You can head to Organifi.com/Keisha and use code Keisha for 20% off any item in their store. That's Organifi, Organifi.com/KACIA and code Keisha for 20% off any item in their store. And then, of course, if you have any questions, you can always DM me on Instagram. You know, I love keeping you in the loop about my thoughts on any of their products and all of that jazz. So without further ado, let's dive back in. So, okay, you have written 7 books, okay? Can you tell us about, like, the crappy part of writing a book, or, like, when you're starting it and you're, like, kind of overwhelmed, or, like, because there's a lot of people that have big goals that they're working on and they're in, like, the messy middle. They want to take a fork and shove it in their eyeball. They're just like, ugh. Tell us about that part and kind of how you personally work through it.
Well, I'll tell you this. 4 years ago, my wife was like, hey, you're a jerk for the 2 years when you write a book, and you're a jerk for the 2 years when you sell a book. And that's not it. Like, I would rather you be a plumber and happy than have you be a writer and miserable. So we need a different soundtrack. So she called me out on that, and she was right. And the reason why is that I was using the wrong fuel for my production. So a few years ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, I was in a difficult business situation. I had to save the day. Like, it was a crisis and I had to save the day, and I pulled it off. And I learned from that moment, I can function in a crisis. That's an okay soundtrack. That's not bad. But then unfortunately that mutated into, I need a crisis to function. Like, and so when there wasn't a crisis, I would just create one. And that's a miserable person to be around. And so I think a lot of times when you feel stuck, you should go, hold on, what fuel am I using? Like, what fuel am I using right now? I love how Brad Montague says it. Brad Montague created this concept called Kid President, really successful, interviewed Beyonce and Obama. And I said to him, how do you create the next thing? Like, you just did something really good. How do you, like, that's got to be a lot of pressure. Like, and that's a broken soundtrack to Nashville where I live. Songwriters say the best and worst day of a songwriter's life is the day you hit number one, because then you have to repeat it. And that is the definition of a broken soundtrack, that even in the moment where you celebrate the number one, you're already having that stirrup of like, I'm screwed. I'll never recreate this. So I said, Brad, how do you deal with that? And he said, I know there's a difference between when I create from love or for love. From love is I have a thing inside of me that I have to get out. I have to share this. I'm going to do it. For love is I'm creating something, hoping somebody will tell me I'm lovable, hoping somebody will clap loud enough, hoping I'll get enough likes, hoping I'll get enough whatever. And that is a really good soundtrack. So for me, I try to stay plugged into that. I try to stay plugged into, okay, why am I doing this? What am I doing this for? The soundtrack I used for this book was light and easy. Like, what if this process, even though it's challenging, were light and easy? Like, what would that look like? How would that feel? What would that be? How would I remind myself of that? How would I change the shoes I wear when I write? Like, what are some creative ways that I can do that? So if ever somebody's stuck in the middle, I think about that. But yeah, I mean, the challenging parts of writing a book are, you know, the first couple layers or first couple drafts are just junk. Like, you just wade through. Wow. Like, I probably wrote 180,000 words to write a 50,000 word book. And so you feel like, oh, this is a waste. Oh, like, and some days you show up and there's 1,000 good words, and some days you show up and there's 10. And here's what I'd say to everyone working on a goal. I can predict the exact amount of time it's going to take for your goal to succeed. It always takes longer than you want. Like, longer than you want. And so I would just encourage people, like, yeah, it feels that way. Like, it 100% feels that way. It's challenging. It's stressful. But that's why I have, you know, I have soundtracks that I think about. I have soundtracks that I go, okay, this is like here. I mean, here's one. This is from November 8th, light and easy. Like, this is a post-it note on my desk. I'm like, remember, light and easy, light and easy. I don't hope I remember the good things. I make it a habit to look at the good things. And that's the difference.
Yeah. Let's talk about that in terms of like this whole concept in soundtracks of symbols and like how you're actually using that to support yourself. And also definitely give us some examples of people that are like wanting to find symbols in their life. Like, all of this is so good.
Well, so symbols help us remember new things that are true. Like, that's the, and the best brands in the world already know this. The swoosh mark for Nike is a symbol. It symbolizes something. That's why Yeti's so brilliant. Yeti found a way to turn a cooler into a symbol. Like, in the 1990s, nobody put an igloo sticker on their truck to let you know, like, hey, in case you're curious how I keep things cold, this is how I do it. Wanted you to know, like, this is how I approach ice. Like, but now the world is covered with Yeti stickers because it's a symbol. Lululemon is a symbol. Mm-hmm. And so the best brands already know that. So what I encourage people to do is to make a symbol with three things. It has to be personal. So it has to mean something to you. Like, everybody's symbol is different. One of the people in the book, her name was Lachelle Hansen. She said, every rejection letter I get from a publisher or from a literary agent, I keep it and I put a bright yellow sticker on it that says, good job. Like, the kind of stickers you'd get in the fourth grade. And she said, and I have a binder of them and I put it on my shelf because someday I'm going to put a real book by that. That's amazing for her. That would cripple me. Like, spending time looking at rejections would, like, that is... Yeah. Quicksand for me, but it works for her. So it has to be personal. The second thing is it has to be visible. You have to be able to see it multiple times. So like this one, this is a pine cone from Jackson Hole. Like, they were free on the street, just right there on the street. And I took this and it's on my desk because I went into that with the soundtrack, don't miss it. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. Because I went to Jackson Hole 3 weeks before my book came out. It's my first book in 4 years. And it would have been really, really easy to physically be present and emotionally and mentally miss the entire trip. So I said, don't miss it. And there's other times I'm going to be tempted to miss. So I have this soundtrack and I have a symbol. And then the last thing is it has to be simple. It has to be simple because then you'll actually spend time with it. So I, you know, my favorite example of that, the Nike Livestrong bracelets that they did with Lance Armstrong are a perfect example of this because think about it. Number one, it was personal. You never met somebody that said, oh, I wear this because I hate cancer, just the disease. Like, I wear jewelry about diseases. Here's my psoriasis necklace. Like, no one ever said that. They always said, my uncle died of cancer and it means a lot to me. Yeah. My mom had breast cancer. This means a lot to me. The second thing is they were visible. Nike could have made them beige, could have made them gray. They didn't. They made them bright yellow. The third thing is, it was simple. No one had to be explained how to use a bracelet. Nobody was like, so the whole part goes in the arm part. Like, how do I do this? So I think that if you can get really creative, like, and it could be one of the women in the book, she picked up a rock at the top of a hike to remind herself that there's beauty at the top. Like, it's worth it to go to the top because there's beauty there. She picked up a rock. That's beautiful. Because if you said to me, John, I just can't, I'm not creative enough to create a symbol, I'd be like, do you live near rocks? Like, probably. Like, can you pick up a rock? Like, probably. But then also people have them as tattoos. Like, that was really fascinating. It was in the research, people that were like, I got choose joy on my wrist because I needed to be reminded to choose joy. Because a lot of times it's easier to choose negativity and I want to be reminded to choose joy. So that's what a symbol does. It connects you to something you're trying to remember that's true. And it gives you a creative way to touch that soundtrack multiple times a day.
I love it. It's so powerful because it's one of those things, like a lot of things in your book, that's just like, it's simple to understand, but if you actually practice it, it will change the whole game. Like, yeah,
it'll change
everything.
It's crazy. That's what's been really fun about this project is that I feel like I essentially lost my job in March of 2020. I'm a public speaker.
Yeah.
Like, guess what didn't happen starting in March? Live events. And so, but I felt like the entire world just got covered in water, but I had spent years learning how to swim. Like, I'd learned all these ways to change my thinking, and that saved me in 2020. It made me really excited in this year to be able to share that with other people to go, oh, you don't have to think that. Or, oh, hey, here's, you can actually have a new thought that pushes you forward, and here's how to do it. And there's actually a simple way. And if you'll lean into it, it can change your life. Like, that's what's been so, and it's, the book's only been out a week, but I think it's going to be a book that I sit on for a long time. Because I see it in companies. Once you bump into the idea of a soundtrack, you see that individuals have them, couples have them, families have them, companies have them. Like, you'll start to see soundtracks everywhere, and you'll start to use the language. Like, when a friend tells you something, you go, I think that might be a broken soundtrack, because I think you really can do that. Like, and I think if you had a new soundtrack, you might believe that too. What would that look like? And that's what's fun for me.
Yeah. And okay, can you give an example of some of like the couple soundtracks that you've like, that a lot of people have come to you with, or that you've noticed that when those are repaired, it's increased like just the connection that they have in their relationships?
Yeah. So, I mean, here's one. A soundtrack that's healthy for a relationship is that each person gets to have their own level of excitement. Sometimes what happens is that the dreamer in the relationship has this crazy plan. They love it. And they bring it to the other person and the other person doesn't match their level. And that person feels attacked. That person feels like, you didn't support me, but you each should have your own level. Like, my wife, Jenny, should get to express her excitement and passion and engagement about an idea in her way, in her language. Yeah. And when I was young, like when we were young married, if she wouldn't match my level, I would take that as, wow, she's not on board, she doesn't support me, versus going, I want her to be fully Jenny and have, you know, her interpretation. So I think that's one thing that you see couples go, okay, we each get to be fully who we are in support of each other, but I don't go to her and go, if you don't match my excitement, because sometimes I've thought about the idea for 6 weeks and then I give her a 6-minute summary and expect her like feel excited as I do. Like, what? Like, that is a recipe for a disaster. Versus going, hey, I want, you know, like, here's this idea I'm going to share. And I'd love, you know, I'd love your thoughts on it, but I'm going to give you your like room for you to express it in your, the way you express things. I mean, sometimes it's asking questions. My wife, Jenny, in the middle of this book, read it and came up and she said, do you want feedback or compliments? And I just started dying laughing, because there's times when it's like, yeah, I need compliments. Like, it's a new idea and it's pretty fragile. So like, please. But there's other times where I'm like, no, I need you to say, this was fake.
Yeah.
This isn't funny. This isn't helpful. And I go, and I'm not like, believe me. I'm like, oh, I want it to be amazing, but I need that. So I think sometimes great couples ask great questions. Like, hey, what do you need from me right now? Like, help me understand what that is. And then I think the other thing is great couples make room for great friends. Like, you as a spouse are not supposed to carry every part of that. Like, I need men in my lives that I can discuss stuff with. I need friends that I can bounce ideas off of. And so I think sometimes when you try to put that entire thing on your spouse, or when the spouse doesn't make space for that with you, it gets really toxic. And you end up, you know, really isolated, even in the context of a marriage. Those are ones that I've seen people change and go, okay. And the other thing is ask your spouse or partner, if what you're thinking is true. So an example of that in the book, there was a guy who was like, you know what? I don't allow myself to have a hobby. I don't allow myself to have fun because I feel guilty that I'd be taking away time from my wife. And I said, well, what would she say if you asked her if that was true? And he said, she's the one that encourages me the most. Like, but he's lying for her. My friend Al Andrews calls it lying for somebody else. So it's kind of like if you have a fight in the morning with somebody, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, partner, whatever, and then you think about it all day, you end up adding a bunch of things they didn't say to the conversation. And so you lie for them all day. And by the time you get home, it's an even bigger fight. So you need to say like, hey, this is what I thought you said. What did you really say? And he asked his wife like, hey, I'd like to have a hobby. And she's like, amen. I would love you to. Like, I'm not holding you back. And so it's the same with travel. I was lying for my wife. I was acting like Jenny had said to me, how dare you go out of town? I can't believe you're doing that. And I was saying all these lies. And when she actually told me the truth, it helped clear things up. So I think great couples have conversations like that.
Yes. I love that she's just like, John, like, this is your job. Like, go
yeah,
do your
yeah.
job.
She like very Bill Belichick in that way. She was like, yeah, do your job. Like, go crush it. Like, we love. And the other thing, the part of that story I didn't put into the book is we connect my job to good stuff. So for our kids, we go, hey, you know how we're at Disney World right now? Remember that time dad went to, you know, to Indiana for 3 days and missed that school play? Like, those things are connected. We're able to do these fun things like go camping or go whatever because we as a family work together. And so we tie that absence to good stuff so that it's further reaffirmed that like, yeah, I want them to be passionate about what they do. And I don't want them to see what I do as some kind of burden because I don't think it is. Like, I work really hard at it, but I also feel so grateful that I get to do it. And I want them to find something that makes them feel grateful too. I don't want them to find a bad job because they think I've had one.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It's so powerful that like people forget the things that you're saying, but it's like how you are making them feel and your kids are getting to see an example of that. And also like, I don't know your wife. I feel like she should be on this podcast because she sounds really awesome.
She's amazing. But she is a boss. She has an undergrad in photojournalism and a master's in construction management. So she got an undergrad in art and then got a full ride to Georgia Tech as one of the few women in the construction management program. Like, she is, when people meet her, they're like, what? Like, and I'm like, I know, right? I know.
Yeah. Oh, and also it's cool because it's funny when you were even talking about like energy of like, you know, letting her get excited to the level of enthusiasm that she wants to, which feels true and aligned for her. My fiance and I are different in terms of energy level. And I remember at the beginning when we first started dating, I would be like, you don't seem as pumped as me. But now looking at it, I'm like, it would be such a combustion. Like, imagine if Jenny had the exact same energy as you. It would be an explosion in your house.
We would be stealing the mic from each other constantly. It would be. And so here's the best way I ever heard somebody say it, this guy, John Woodall, 100% his idea. He said, in every relationship, there's a how person and a wow person. And the wow person goes, here's this thing. And then the how person asks questions. Well, how are we going to do that? How are you going to launch that? And the wow person feels attacked. And the how person is living out of their strength. I'm going to help you figure out how to do it. And so his big thing was he would say, if your wow person comes down with a new idea and they're excited, just say wow back to them for 2 weeks. If they still even remember it 2 weeks later, then ask them how. But they're probably not going to. Like, the number of ideas I've run downstairs to Jenny and be like, this is the one, I'm getting a URL, I'm doing it. And so like that to me is one of the most powerful, like there's a how and a wow. How do we support each other? What does that look like? Because then the wow person, their job is to go down to the how person and say, I don't need feedback. I don't need how questions. I'm excited about this thing and you're my favorite person to be excited with. So I'm going to tell it to you. And then it sets the stage that you're not waiting for them to go analyze it or deconstruct it because it's not in the deconstruct phase yet. And that really helped my marriage.
So good. You've got so much advice. Like, you just have this like cool dad vibe. Like, it just works for you. I'm like it.
So funny. Yeah. My kids would say, I do not have a cool dad vibe. They keep telling me whatever you do, please don't do Instagram reels. They're like, dad, you're like, don't do it, dad.
You need to like start doing those dances
on
there.
I keep threatening to do like, and I'll do them like 3 months after they're popular to make it even worse. Like, it'll be like the one where like, dun, 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 and I'm bouncing and they're like, dad, you're killing me. Yeah. Teenagers are fun to embarrass. They are.
So with you and Jenny, what are some of the soundtracks that you're wanting to like have your kids take with them in their lives? Like, what are some things that are really important for you guys to share with your kids?
Well, we're trying to like fill them so full of love that when the world bumps them, they don't completely empty. We're being really deliberate about that. We're being really deliberate that, there's so much more to them than how they look. Cause there's so many other voices saying the opposite. So especially with social media, We try to really talk about that a lot, about, okay, who they are. Like, we want them to have a full life regardless of if they get married. Like, and they might get married. I would love that. I would love that. But I don't want them to leave the house with a thought that if I don't, I don't have a full life. So we're kind of like, okay, how do we as parents pour into them in that way that they grow up with that understanding? And then also the challenge is always, I think as a parent, you run beside your kids instead of in front of them, pulling them. So like with a goal, like I'll take my daughter, McCray is 15 and she wanted to be on the lacrosse team and she had to run an eight and a half minute mile. And she was like, "Dad, will you help me train?" And I was like, "Totally." But I let her own the goal. Like she made her own chart. Like she ran a lot of days without me, but I ran beside her on the days that we got to run with each other. And I didn't make it a dad, like where I don't want to suffocate my kids' passions. Cause sometimes the temptation as a parent is your kid expresses a little interest in art and you're like, "Oh, they're an artist." And then every birthday, every Christmas, every activity is art, 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 and they get burned out. And so there's this kind of back and forth of like, you nurture and support the passion. Like if they're passionate about something, like my daughter, Ellie got really into skimboarding. We spent a couple weeks at the beach and she was skimboarding 8 hours a day. Like she was so focused on it. And so by day three, we were like, okay, we're not going to have you on a $20 board because you're going to get hurt. So we went and skimboarding, I learned there's only two types of boards. There's a $20 one at like the pier that has like a pit bull on it. And then there's like the $300 like fiberglass one that somebody's doing flips with in San Diego. And I was like, there's no middle. So like my oldest daughter has a baller skimboard. Now she went half with us on it. Like that's another thing. Like we're trying to teach our kids skin in the game and teach them that no isn't a terrible thing and like patience and all those things. But you want to like, you give her some space. And then if she goes, "This is a thing I'm going to go into," then as a parent, you push as hard as you can to help make that happen without crippling them or taking away the struggle from them. That's kind of it feels like that's the back and forth. But those are things that we talk about all the time. And then we talk about silly things like early is on time. Like that's one of our family rules, like early is on time, or we don't show up hungry. If we go on a road trip to somebody's house, unless like they've said, "We want to have dinner for you here," we don't roll in a hot mess and also be like, "We're here to sleep at your house. Plus feed us." Like, no, we'll stop. I swear to you, we'll stop half an hour away and be like, "Let's eat dinner so we can show up and be like, let's be thoughtful guests in this." And so we like little things like that, I think are helpful. And little things like that are stuff we think about.
I love it. I had no, I'm just like asking you questions that I personally just think would be really interesting to hear. And I had no idea what direction you're going to go with that. So I love it. Okay. That being said, you wrote this book, you've written 7 books. Like, why did you have to write this book right now? What are you most excited about? And can you give us even just like the framework of the 3 questions that you kind of ask yourself with soundtracks? Cause we didn't even actually touch on that.
Sure.
So,
I wrote this book because it changed the way I thought, changed my life. And it was 2008. And so I started to get curious, would it help other people? And so if anybody wants to write a book, start a business, start a podcast, be a speaker, there's always 3 things I look for, to come up with an idea. 1, is there a personal connection? Do I have a personal passion with this topic? 2, is there a need? Do I see people that actually need it? 3, is there a spot for me in the marketplace? So let's take Finish. We talked about that a little bit. Finish, I realized I don't finish a lot of things I start. I want to change that. I was personally connected to that. 2, people came up to me and were like, "I like your book Start, but I've never had a problem starting. How do you finish?" And I didn't have an answer. And then 3, I went to Amazon. I typed in Finish and the only thing that came up was laundry detergent and dishwasher detergent. Like today, if you go to Amazon right now and type in Finish, it's dishwasher detergent and my book. So I thought, wow, there's a spot for me. So with this book, my life had been changed with overthinking and changing how I think. So I had a personal connection. The second thing is we asked 10,000 people and 99.5% of people said, yes, they struggle with overthinking. And 3, there wasn't a funny book, in my opinion, that taught you how to turn it from a super problem into a superpower. There were a lot of books that would be like, stop, stop, stop. But I wanted to try a different approach. And so I think you need all 3 of those things, because let's say you find something you like that you're super passionate about. Nobody's serving in the market, but nobody needs it. That's just a hobby. And hobbies are awesome. Yeah. You should have hobbies, but like, there's not like, you're not going to launch a product. Let's say you're passionate about something. You think people need it, but it's overserved in the market. That's a cake pop. Like if you told me today, like John, I got this crazy idea. Like if we were talking before this recording, you're like, oh, I live in Austin and we're going to launch a keg pop store. I'd be like, I hate to tell you this. You were like 10 years too late. Like by the time it's at Starbucks, that need is met.
I feel like you would actually say that too. I feel like you'd be like, oh,
if we like each other, I would say that. Somebody the other day, a close friend texted me and said, dude, I've been listening to you on podcasts. And when you disagree with somebody's idea, you say, huh, that's interesting. I was like, oh, that's right. Like when somebody says something, I'm like, no, that ain't right. I go, huh, that's interesting. And it's just a pause word I'm using to try to figure out how to take the conversation back where I think it's helpful. But I would, yeah, if we were friends, I would tell you like, no. So that's why I wrote the book. The framework of the three questions is when you find a loud soundtrack, not every thought, nobody has time to interview every thought. Like we're also like, yeah. No, I would never say that. You have millions of thoughts. You take a loud one. And these are the three questions. You say, is it true? Is this thing I'm telling myself true? Second question, is it helpful? When I listen to it, does it move me forward or pull me back? And third, is it kind? Would I say it to a friend? And I'll give you an example. So you might say, I can't invest my money. I can't pay off credit card debt. I can't get into money because I don't understand the stock market. That might be true, but is listening to that kind? Like, does it make you go forward or pull you back? It doesn't sound helpful. It's not kind. Another example of a kind one. I talked to somebody on a podcast interview and they said, John, I've had the number one podcast in my category for 9 months in a row. And the soundtrack I keep hearing is you're just lucky. You're just lucky. You're just lucky. He said, if a friend came over and said, hey, I've worked really hard on this thing. And for 9 months, it's been successful. I would never say to them, you're just lucky. You're just lucky. And so he realized, wait a second, that's not kind. Why am I saying that? So I think that if you'll ask those questions, and again, sometimes is it true, you'll say yes to, but then you'll go, but is it helpful? Does it move me forward? Like, I don't know a lot about podcasting right now. I have a podcast called All It Takes Is a Goal that I absolutely love. I'm only 15 episodes in. If I heard a soundtrack that said you're not an expert at podcasts, I'd say, yes, that's true. But is listening to that helpful? Does it make me want to get better or do I feel ashamed? Chances are it doesn't propel me forward. And is it kind? If I had a friend who was starting a podcast and they were only 15 episodes in, I would never go, you're not even an expert. You're not an expert. Because they would go, how is that kind? Like, no, of course I'm not an expert. I've done it 15 times. Like, give me some space. So those questions, and again, they're simple, but if you ask them and actually do them, there's all this hope. Kind of like, I would call them Trojan horse questions. Like you go, I can answer, like I can ask this, like, and then you're going to unpack them and go like, oh, there's something else inside. And that's really fun to watch people do.
That's why it works so well. And I know that I'm like preaching to the choir here, but like, honestly, that's why it works so well because it is simple and practical, which is why this book is so important. And I'm so excited for everybody to get it. So what is your intention? So people want to go buy your book, obviously they can get your book anywhere, but what's your intention? What do you want the feeling for them to like have when they read this book or like, how do you want them to feel at the end?
Totally. I think my goal with the book is I want to help you write a new story for yourself. The story you'll hear the most in your entire life, even if you read Harry Potter 50 times, the story you'll hear more than any other story is the story you tell yourself about yourself. And most people don't know that they get to write their own story. And so I think the book will help you write a new story. And when you do that, you're going to be amazed at how much your thoughts can turn into new actions and can turn into new results. I think there's a lot of your listeners that have had a result in mind. They've had something they wanted to do, but they've got all these thoughts that are getting in the way. And I think once they look at those and take care of some of those, the actions and the results are going to come in a completely different way.
So good. Okay. Last question for you. This is real curveball.
Sure.
We have a podcast Spotify playlist. It's a pump up jam playlist that every person that's been on the podcast has to contribute a song that makes them want to shake their butt or get pumped. So
easy.
What is a song for you?
Rob Dugan, Club to Death. It's from Rob Dugan, is Dugan. It's amazing. It's a techno kind of song. That one, like, it's so good. It's so good. I'm trying to think what Andy Mineo, You Can't Stop Me. I love that one. NF awesome. Motivated, NF Grinding.
Clearly you're just in your office like twerking all day long.
Dude,
or something.
I have a half marathon soundtrack playlist that I listen to, and I'm like, oh, this is like Bubba Sparks, Ugly. That one's a little more like intense, but like They're like, that one is so good, dude. Onyx Slam. That's an old school one. Even Young MC Bust a Move is delightful. You're going to be like, she's dressed in yellow. Delightful. She said, hello, come sit next to me. You find
follow. That's
like,
on the list.
Yeah. Like, so how good. Could that not be? So yeah, I, Andrew Rip Animal. That's another one. Andrew Rip, R-I-P-P, Animal. Most people will know that one. That song is fantastic. That's my official one. Andrew Rip, okay. Animal.
Okay. All right. We had a lot to work with there. Know, so we'll just add them all on there.
I know.
Okay. And then tell them real quick, because obviously people listening to this podcast love podcasts. You came out with a new podcast 15 episodes in. You're rocking it. Like, tell us where we can find your podcast, where we can find you.
Totally. acuff.me/podcast. So acuff.me/podcast. But you can get it on iTunes, Spotify. It's called All It Takes Is a Goal. So what I would say is go listen to the episode with Colleen Berry. She's the one that went from receptionist to CEO. Like, that episode is so encouraging. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are like, wow, I think I can do the same thing. So yeah, it's called All It Takes Is a Goal podcast. And I love it. I love doing it. I'm so honored that I got to do this. It's so encouraging when people support your work. And you've been so kind to me for so long about Finish and now Soundtracks.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. I will link all of the things for everyone to come find you. I appreciate you. And everybody needs to go grab this book, share on Instagram, tag us, let us know your takeaways from today's episode. And thank you again so much, John. I appreciate you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you love this episode, it would mean so much to me if you shared it with a girlfriend. Like, send it to her right now or post it on social media and tag me so I can personally thank you for helping me get the message out. I am so freaking grateful to be on this journey with you, girl. So until next time, I'll talk to you soon.